Jaya Radha, Madhava, Kunja Vihari. Bhupijana Vallabha, Girivarada. Bhupijana Vallabha Girivaradhari Yasodhanandana Braja Janarandana Yasodhanandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Bhupijana Vallabha Girivaradhari Bhupijana Vallabha Girivaradhari Yasodhanandana Braja Janarandana Yasodhanandana Braja Janarandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjavi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjavi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjavi Hari Chayam Vishnupada Pramisapari Vrata Chaya Saprasata Chishimadis Kangas Isi Bhakti Dhanata Swami Shiloka Upada Ki Chayam Vishnupada Pramisapari Vrata Chaya Saprasata Chishimadis Kangas Chaya Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Thakurta Upada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vinda Ki Jaya Iskam Viviti Fandara Acharya Shiloka Upada Ki Jaya Nama Acharya Shil Haridas Thakura Ki Jaya Gora Prevanan Gori Thank you for having me, Hare Krishna. It's been a long time. I used to live here when there were six people living here. That was in 1982. And yeah, there was no temple. Well, there was a temple, but it was a double-wide mobile home, and one side was a kitchen, and one side was a temple room. Prabhupada's Vyasa-san was on one side, the same Prabhupada, and Gurnitai on the left. So we used to, in order to get to the kitchen, we'll go through the temple room, because the steps were very steep outside of the kitchen because the mobile home was elevated. So I remember, well, we all paid obeisances perfunctorily to Srila Prabhupada. And one night I had a dream where I had to go to the kitchen, so I went through the temple room and I just hit my head on the floor like everybody did and just walked away, ignoring everything. And I felt the whole right side of my body burning, like on fire. And then I looked to my right and there it was, Srila Prabhupada was there. It was no Murti, it was Srila Prabhupada himself, just glaring at me, like as if saying, oh, you thought I wasn't here. Okay, not very nice. So I woke up, I thought I was having a heart attack. And from that day on, I never went to a temple where there's a Murti of Srila Prabhupada and thought, no, it's just a Murti. Never. I don't want that burning feeling again. Okay.
We need your photo for the Facebook and all
that. Is it my thumbprint? Okay, so let's begin. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. With this simple sentence, Dhruva Maharaj went back to Godhead after 6 months of chanting. So don't think it's just an invocation. It's a ticket. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva nartanam devin sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam dirayat nasta prayesho vadrishu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati tamasmukyam bhaktir bhavati naistiti Vanchakalpataruvyascha kripasinduvyevacha patitanam pavanavyu vaishnavyu namo namaha. So, am I supposed to do two verses?
Yes.
Thank you. Tesham maireya doshena.
Tesham maireya doshena.
Vishami krita cetasam. Nimlochati ravavasi. Venunamiva mardanam. Tisham maireya doshena. Tishami krita cetasam. Nimlochati ravavasid. Venunamiva mardanam. Tisham maireya doshena. Vishami krita cetasam. Nimlochati ravavasi. Venunamiva mardanam.
Yeah.
Anyone else? No one else? Okay. Tesham of them. Maireya of intoxication. Doshena by the faults. Vishamikrita became imbalanced. Chetasam of those of whom the minds. Nimlochati sets. Ravo the sun. Asit takes place. Venunam of the bamboos. Iva as. Mardanam, destruction. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. As by the friction of bamboos, destruction takes place, so also at sunset, by the interaction of the faults of intoxication, all their minds became unbalanced and destruction took place. Purport. When there is need of fire in the forest, by the will of the Supreme, it takes place due to friction among the bamboos. Similarly, the descendants of Yaru were all destroyed by the will of the Lord by the process of self-destruction. Just as there is no possibility of a fire occurring deep in the forest due to human effort, so also there was no power in the universe which could vanquish the descendants of Yaru who were protected by the Lord. The Lord wanted them to be so destroyed, and thus they obeyed his order as indicated by the word Tat Anugyata. Next verse. Bhagavan Svatmamayaya Gatim Tam Avalokya Sa Sarasvatim Upasprishya Vrikshamulam Upavishat. Translation. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna, after foreseeing the end of his family by his internal potency, went to the bank of the river Sarasvati, sipped water, and sat down underneath a tree. Purport. All the above mentioned activities of the Yadus and Bojas were executed by the internal potency of the Lord, because he wanted them to be dispatched to their respective abodes after he had finished his mission of descent. They were all his sons and grandsons and were given complete protection by the paternal affection of the Lord. How they could be vanquished in the presence of the Lord is answered in this verse. Everything was done by the Lord himself, Svatma Mayaya. The Lord's family members were either incarnations of his plenary expansions or demigods from the heavenly planets, and thus, before his departure, he separated them by his internal potency. Before being dispatched to the respective abodes, they were sent to the holy place of Prabhas, where they performed pious activities and took food and drink to their heart's content. It was then arranged for them to be sent back to their abodes so that others could see that the powerful Yadu dynasty was no longer in the world. In the previous verse, there was Anugyata indicating that the whole sequence of events was arranged by the Lord is significant. These particular pastimes of the Lord are not a manifestation of his external energy or material nature. Such an exhibition of his internal potency is eternal. And therefore, one should not conclude that the Yadus and Bojas died in a drunken state in an ordinary fratricidal war. Sri Jiva Goswami comments on these incidents as magical performances. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Kinanjana Shalakaya Chaksuri Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Kam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nagayate Girim Yatkipata Maham Vande Sri Gurundi Taranam Paramananda Maravam Sri Chaitanya Mishwaram. So here is Krishna performing one of his numerous tricks. First, he created some sort of a bush that grew sticks that they were as hard as iron. Now, where do you see that? This is very uncommon. Because the Yadus could have just looked around and pick up sticks and stones, but that would not have ended the entire dynasty, and there were a lot of them. But there was a bush, very many bushes available, where there were sticks that were hard as iron, so they just beat each other to a pulp. And this was after they had a fermented rice drink, much like sake, but actually Prabhupada said it was a light kind, like probably on the level of beer, not hard liquor. And they performed this magic, just like Lord Krishna, who is about to depart. That's why he didn't want anybody from his family to stay around, because they probably couldn't bear the separation. He also had a very weird incident by which he departed. There was Jara, who shot an arrow, and the arrow, some say that hit his heel, and some say it landed nearby. And who dies by a shot in the heel, even? Maybe Achilles. You heard of Achilles' heel. As in the Greek mythology, is a story of Achilles, who his mother was told that if he dips the kid in a lake, he will become invincible. So she grabbed him by the heel and dipped him, but her hand was covering his heel. So that's the origin of the Achilles heel. So he was shot in the heel. And they were Jarasandha also. Also he had an Achilles heel. It was a little larger than the heel. It was bifurcated to be killed. So this is all Krishna and his troop of performers. Krishna is Prabhupada says, a dramatic actor, and he performs his magic, goes from universe to universe, showing how things are done when you don't have anything else to do. This is Krishna. How do you know who is God? I'm right now talking to a doctor, teaching him about Krishna consciousness. And I'm using the word Krishna. I give him the Gita, but he uses the word God. I don't think he's comfortable yet with the usage of the word Krishna as God. But Krishna is the best candidate for God. Because if you go to a place, and a place of business, and everybody has a little card identifying themselves. I'm Bob, I'm a floor manager, and I'm Susan, I'm the cashier, and so on. And if someone doesn't have a label, it's probably because they own the place. It's not gonna say, John, owner. So Krishna, when he performs as God, when he goes to the office, he's Vishnu. So if you go to a bank and you see someone, chairman or president or vice president, but they have a name. That's not their name, that's their position. So Krishna is the name of God, the ultimate name of God. And Vishnu is God when he goes to the office. But when he comes home and puts his slippers and, lays in his lounge chair, that is Krishna. Because Krishna doesn't have anything to do, he doesn't have a job. So he performs all sorts of tricks and magic and adventures with his friends and family. And whereas God, he has other occupations. For example, in the material world, someone is in charge of creation, someone is in charge of destruction, and Vishnu himself is in charge of maintenance. Why? Because it's the most difficult thing. If you have a house, that building a house takes maybe a few months and a lot of effort. And knocking it down takes just a bunch of rednecks with a large hammers. But to maintain the house for many years and keep it nice, that is very difficult. So that's why Vishnu does the maintenance. And In this case, this is Vishnu is not involved. It's Krishna and his family. And apparently, they were intoxicated by this light rice beverage, but they were actually performing a pastime that was orchestrated and choreographed by Krishna himself, who is soon to depart from this world. We can see Prabhupada also mentions about at night, because intoxication is more prominent at night. Because during the day, people are either waking up or working, so they don't have, and they need to be functional for a while, but then in the evening, people drink. I was surprised going to Australia many years ago, I think it was 95 and also 97, to see so many young, very young students, you know, just in the afternoon after they exit high school. They all had paper bags with hard liquor. They're all drinking in the train, you know, anywhere. Why is that? Why do people resort to intoxication? It's because they don't enjoy the life that they have. That's exactly why. Why would anybody take any intoxicant? It's because they're not happy. It's because their life is miserable and they need to forget, basically, that they're miserable. But this is a temporary state, as we all know, and it doesn't last very long. And you're back to being a jerk after you get off the liquor. You realize, you know, nothing has changed, except that I have a headache now, I have a hangover. So this wasn't the case with the Yadus. Basically, the Yadus took a little light fermented rice and they beat each other to death. They were very powerful. And Krishna didn't want to leave them on the planet because they were too powerful. Nobody could defeat him. So if they got the wrong idea, then nobody will be able to stop them. So Krishna had to take them himself by this mystical, magical arrangement. So what are the lessons to be learned? First, that you should not take intoxicants because they're a waste of time and they're harmful. We have seen, actually, even devotee children, that they have suffered for years and years of addiction due to taking up intoxication, drugs, hard drugs. There was, I'm not going to mention his name, but he was a former Gurukula star, and he went to college where we were manning a center in that town. So it was, he didn't have much, actually didn't have any contact with devotees. After he left Gurukula, he went to a regular high school, and he lost the connection, because this is important to be always connected with devotees, even if you don't get along with them, even if you think they're weird and they're quirky and et cetera, it's always good, because they know what the ultimate goal is. Even if they are weird, they know Krishna is God and I'm a servant. So at least that is clear. So after losing touch with devotees, he developed some bad habits, like smoking and drinking and taking drugs. And he wasn't going to college in the town that we were staying. So I made a promise that I didn't know if I could accomplish, to deliver this child. He made a promise to his father. I said, I'm going to try my hardest to turn him again and make him a devotee. And it was difficult because he was living with three guys that had never been to Gurukula. They weren't devotees, and they were constantly, completely intoxicated. They were completely, always stoned, always drunk, always, it was something. They were even growing pot in the bathtub of their house. So when the parents or grandparents of these kids that came to visit, they pretended that one of them was showering because they couldn't use the bathroom because they had a growing operation there. And I brought prasadam always, and I did very little preaching. Basically, it was just trying to get him out of the stupor of intoxication. And I always bring prasadam, then I ask to, try to engage this boy, you know, maybe you can help me. We're doing programs in town, and I need help cooking, and I help setting up, et cetera, et cetera. So he complied, and eventually he started cooking himself and offering himself. And his roommates, these three stoners, they noticed that prasadam tasted different. It was better than whatever they had. So they will buy stuff at the grocery store and give it to this boy to offer because it tastes better. So they were into sense enjoyment, but they wanted it to be prasadam because they knew it was going to taste better. And eventually this boy, now a man, got back his devotional memory, and you know, he became a nice devotee. He has a family and kids. They're all devotees. They were practicing, and this is the result of intoxication. Is what happened to the other boys. One of them died. I think it wasn't drug related, but it was kind of a heart attack after a hard night of drugs. One of them went crazy. Certifiable, he was institutionalized, and the other one became a born-again Christian because he knew that was the one of the ways that he could stop taking drugs. So this is the destiny of the other three, and they were all actually having taken heroin at that point. So this other boy got, you know, out right on time. So this is a result of intoxication, that one loses common sense, and the intelligence gets bewildered. But intoxication doesn't limit itself to substances. It also means greed and lust and anger and so on. One loses one's head and is unable to think. So even though these yadus were intoxicated, it wasn't enough to kill each other. Obviously, you know, if you have a fight with one of your family members or with your friends, you have a dispute about something, maybe you have even a short fist fight or something, but then basically you're separated and make friends again, you know, okay, sorry, I apologize, blah, blah, when the intoxication is over. But the yadus were very advanced souls, associates of Krishna directly. They beat each other to death. So you have to see that this has nothing to do with the external energy. This was arranged by Krishna himself. Okay, now you guys have to get out, and since I have a way for you to do that, I'm going to make you beat each other to the pulp, and then you're going to be gone. So this is Krishna. Krishna does magic. He performs all sorts of amazing pastimes that make no sense to others. Like sometimes we offer some dish that is a little spicy. You know? If you come from an Indian background, you consider your level of tolerance is much higher usually than a Western, and they offer these hot things, hot, very hot stuff to Krishna. And this, the chilies, actually, they don't come from India. They come from Mexico and Central America. They are not originally from India. So all this hot stuff that is authentic Indian, it's not really. It's actually a concoction, you know, just a preference, a taste. Now, of course, would Krishna accept this, even if it is not, quote-unquote, Vedic? Well, he ate a forest fire. I'm sure he can handle spicy subject. So, but this is Krishna. He can do anything. But we shouldn't push our luck. In 1993, I went to India and Kartik, and I was distributing books, all this for years, and I wanted to take a break to be basically in a holy place by myself for a while. So I talked to Mahanidhi Swami at the time, who was living in the Radha Damodar quarters, Srila Prabhupada's quarters, and I asked him, where can I go that I can be by myself during Kartik in Vrindavan, which is, if you have been there, you know, it's literally impossible. There's people everywhere, especially during Kartik. And I said, what about Radha Kunda? He said, no, that's the worst place. I mean, it's the best place in the universe, but it's totally packed full. What about Varshana? He said, well, there is this Baba in Varshana, that he has a room. Let me think about it. So I came back the next day and he said, I found a place, but I'm not sure you're going to get it. The place is Raval. Raval is where Radharani was born. And there's a small temple and some ruins next to it. And they have a room, but it has been uninhabited for maybe 100 years. So I'm not sure you're going to go, but I know who runs the place. He works as a bank teller at the Bank of Baroda in Mathura. So, all right, I went to Mathura. First, I wanted to experience the local flavor. So I took a tanga, a horse carriage. Not recommended, by the way. It's very slow and very jumpy, and there's a lot of people, and there's a wooden seat, and it takes over a half an hour. The good thing is that, because no Westerner will ever take one of those means of transportation, they couldn't overcharge me. So I paid exactly what all the locals were paying, which was 2 paisas. There are 100 paisas in 1 rupee, and there are, 90 rupees in a dollar, so you can do the math. It wasn't very much. And I go to Mathura, I went to the bank, I talked to the manager. He didn't speak English, but there was someone who could translate. And I said, I came because I need the mercy of Srimati Radharani. And so I would like to stay for a week or 10 days. And I know you have a room in that temple in Raval. He said, we haven't had anybody in 100 years. I've been asked before, maybe even by sannyasis and big people, but never allowed anybody. I said, that's okay. That's okay. I want to sit outside of a bank and chant, and I'm going to fast until you agree. So it's fine. You can make a decision. So I just proceeded to leave, and I said, I need all these people, they all live here. They already got the mercy. Mine is a special case. I'm seeking the mercy. So I sat outside, and the guy brought me in and said, that's fine. We'll do it. He knew I was determined, and I actually was determined to do it. So I went to the temple, and I spent time in this little room. There was only one pujari. The story is tying up with the chilies right now. I'll come to that. And the only food that was available was the Mahaprasadam that was offered to the deities, which was literally, you need an asbestos palate to eat that. It was so hot. It was so hot. The pujari walked around with chilies in his hand all day. I'm not kidding. He just had chilies in his hand. And his cooking was just unbearably hot. And this is what I ate for the next, I think I was there for 5 or 6 days. And it was wonderful, but you know, I couldn't digest anything, but it was hot. It was very, very hot. So I don't know why I told this story. Anyway, it doesn't matter at this point. It's done already. So Krishna can eat whatever he wants. He doesn't have to use his tongue. He can use his eyes. But we can't. We can't. We actually have to eventually come to the mode of goodness somehow or other. Why? Because it's closer to transcendence. And it's not such a jump. Like, it's very difficult to get Krishna from a mode of passion and practically impossible from a mode of ignorance. So we have to get to the mode of goodness somehow or other. So we should offer palatable dishes that Krishna will appreciate, not just hot things to burn everybody's palate. And Krishna offer this magical display for the world to see that these were not ordinary people. You don't find bushes growing iron-like sticks and people killing each other for no reason. Literally, I don't think there was a reason why they started to fight. They just started fighting. And there was some sort of disagreement. And Krishna brought them back. Okay. I think we can stop here and ask for comments and questions. Some contentions. Yes, there is two ladies and the Prabhu there.
So, about your story of a young devotee who seems to be going out of his path on the spiritual journey, how do you explain this when devotees do their best to raise their children, even in holy dams or whatever, and that soul decides that it's not going to be a journey for a little while? Is it just that the soul found free will, has made a little advancement for a little while, and he's stopping and it will take it back?
Yeah, we're all individual souls. And
can you repeat the question?
The question is what is the reason why? Please correct me if I'm not representing your question properly. Why is that even kids that are brought up in a holy dump and with all facilities and the right association, eventually somehow or other they just lose a taste or deviate? What is the reason that forces them to do that? Is that more or less what you asked?
Yeah.
I think that is... since the soul is individual and has a certain trajectory, and they have to, like, for example, let me give you a difficult example. A couple, they have a child, and the child dies suddenly, quickly, either a miscarriage or even after, during infancy, and it's a terrible thing. But if you think from a perspective of that soul, they had to complete a cycle that they had to finish just a small portion of their karma until they could live for the spiritual world. So they were born in a family of devotees, they were taken care of, they heard a holy name, they took prasadam, they got love from their parents, and then they depart. So some souls have kind of a troublesome past, and now, you know, it's time to cash it in. It just comes back. It actually depends on the individual, because you can see that the same situation when someone is strong and serious about Krishna consciousness, they will take it as a test. They will become stronger, and others, they will fall by the side. Eventually, they all come back, because there's no loss or diminution according to Krishna, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita. So whatever spiritual path you have traversed is never lost. You will be situated there. But some have a longer journey than others, and they have to go through trials and tribulation. And everybody involved is difficult to admit, but you know they had to be. It's in their past too that they had to be involved in this particular type of history. It's not like somebody got the mistaken karma, you know, someone else's karma. Oh, wait a second, you know, look at my history. This is not mine, this is someone else's. There's no such thing. There's no mistakes in divine justice. So we have to endure pain and tribulations if one of our children is going astray. But rest assured, they will come back. If it's not in this life, it will be in the next. It will be difficult, but it will happen.
So related to this, they say that you shouldn't be a teacher, a mother, a father, or a spiritual master if you cannot bring your dependents back home, back to Godhead. So there is some guilt that builds up as you feel that you didn't do the right thing.
Yeah, you may feel like that, but it may not be true. You think, oh, I could have done this, I could have done that, but you've done your best. I heard this phrase so many times in my life, you know, hey, this person is doing their best. But I never really believed that. I thought, well, potentially that person could do better. I always thought of that, of myself and others. And one day, I was with a carmi meat eater, you know, all these disqualifications, not a devotee, not a philosopher, and he was actually describing someone at work that was giving him trouble. And I joined in, I jumped in the bandwagon, and I started criticizing this guy. Yeah, this guy shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't be doing that. And he stopped me. He said, he's doing his best. I was surprised. And from that day on, I thought, actually, this makes sense. Even though we may think otherwise, everybody's doing their best they can. Because if they could do better, they would. So even if it appears like, okay, this person could do better, no, they can't. They can't. And we have to help them. Sometimes help means not intervening. Just keeping a distance or helping them from afar or helping through something else. Like I tried to preach Krishna consciousness to my parents. That didn't work. If you ever try to do that, family members, old friends. There was a friend that actually when I became a devotee, I came and told him about chanting Hare Krishna. And he didn't have much of a problem because his last name was Rama. So he got the message really quick. So he was chanting his own name. So he started chanting 25 rounds a day. He was pretty happy. But the rest, they didn't take me very seriously. So we have to sometimes, the best way to act is not to act, to keep distance, and to have someone else help them. Even though it's painful, we may have to witness this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think your wife has had a question.
Thank you, Prabhu. I want to congratulate you for having the determination to deliver that devotee, you know.
It was Krishna. I was just there.
Yeah, thank you. When you mentioned the very first thing about Srila Prabhupada's presence in his murti form, there's a wonderful story, pastime. You remember Rasagya and Lohitaksha. When Rasagya, when they were in Spain, she was dressing Prabhupada in the Vyasa-san. And in the cold winter, she would iron Srila Prabhupada's clothes just before putting them on. They were ironed already, but just before putting them on, she would iron them so they're warm. And what's interesting is Rasagya is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, but Srila Prabhupada appeared in a dream to Mitilaksha, who is his grand disciple in New York, because Rasagyal would end up there occasionally, coming back to Skirmahorn Temple. And she had a dream. Srila Prabhupada appeared to her and said, "Tell Rasagya, thank you for warming my clothes." Imagine, you know, that was in Spain. Rasagya wasn't even there at the time in New York. But when she finally came, Nityalaksha asked her, what was that about? And that was it. Amazing, huh? Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
One thing is, Nityalaksha was such a determined book distributor. So he chose her to deliver that message to Rasagya.
It so happened in the Yadu clan that there were two survivors of the Mahabharata. One was on the Pandava side and one was on the Kaurava side. And so they started an argument between the two of them. And then some of the Yadus took one side and the other took the other side. And, you know, I mean, of course, it's an external reason, you know, but that was how the thing got heated. Satyaki accused Kritavarman, "You killed some sleeping sons of Draupadi. Why you did this? You stole the Shamantaka jewel. Why you did this?" Then Kritavarman said, "You killed Burishrava when he was in meditation. Why you did, you know?" So, and that was how the whole killing took place.
I imagine much like the Hatfields and the McCoys, that by the time they were beating each other, nobody remembered why they were fighting. Okay.
Yes.
Yes, glory.
Lord Shiva is known as Asutosh, which means he's very easily pleased. And the reason why he associates with the ghosts and the goblins and the material the lower class and trying to befriend them. And he uses intoxication to befriend them so that if he needs their assistance in doing the battle of Europe, to use them for some other reason, they will follow him because he has befriended them. So that intoxication that he's using, can it be considered in service?
I think they could take shelter of Lord Shiva without taking intoxication if they wanted to. So all these, what Prabhupada said is that if they want to imitate Lord Shiva and smoke ganja in a shilom, then you should drink an ocean of poison too. So it's not, I don't think it's a good idea to take intoxication because, you know, Lord Shiva will be pleased. I'm not sure how pleased he will be. The followers of Lord Shiva also are in the mode of ignorance. So, as I was saying, it's very difficult to achieve the path to devotional service to Krishna, which is the goal, through the mode of ignorance. The mode of ignorance is actually harmful. It's harmful. And so is the mode of passion. I heard this example before, that somebody's going to the local swimming pool, and the mode of goodness means the person gets there. There's a locker with combination, so you just there's a combination. There's a clean pair of swimming trunks. Puts it on, leaves his glasses and whatever else is there, and comes at the right time. Goes to the pool. Goes to this. How do you call it? Springboard, and it's right there. Yeah, so it's right there. And the mode of passion is late. He doesn't remember a combination of his locker. He has to figure out, you know, cuts his pants to, you know, imitate swimming trunks, and he doesn't know what in what direction to go, and he forgot something, and he's, you know, just it's a mess. So, on the mode of ignorance, the guy is asleep and doesn't remember anything, doesn't remember he even has an appointment to go to swim. So you can see that the guy in the mode of goodness is right there on the tip of a springboard, but it's not in the water. So the water is transcendence. So one is much closer than the others, but doesn't mean you are transcendental. And in the mode of ignorance, it will be very difficult to get to that point for someone in the mode of goodness. So in order to serve Lord Shiva, out of his mercy, is helping those who can't help themselves and cannot achieve Krishna because they have no idea how things work. So it's better to follow the followers of Krishna than to follow the followers of Shiva. Much better. And Lord Shiva, yes, Asutosh, you know, easily pleased. But even though he gets easily displeased too. So, you know, you're risking there. Sugata.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. You've covered a lot of ground. But I felt compelled to come because the whole situation, you know, Himavati's question about her child and just, you know, bringing up the whole situation with education in ISKCON in those days. And the fact that, you know, whose fault is it? It was really a collective mistake, the way that the children were mistreated, because Prabhupada gave such specific instructions, like don't force the children to chant, you know, make devotional service attractive, you know, attractive for them. And instead, you know, in so many situations, there was every kind of abuse imaginable. And so a lot of these children, they were subjected. I mean, there's different kinds of scales you can look at that will cause addiction, you know, drug use and all of that. And a lot of these kids, like just recently, I think it was last week, there was a young man who passed away in the New York temple of a heart attack, and his sister was writing on Facebook how this boy, everything that he had gone through. So I think it's important to bring it up because we don't want to make those same mistakes. You know, like we have a beautiful Gurukula here. It's not an ashram situation, but the parents have a very active role in their children's upbringing. And that, just that, again, it's everybody's duty to raise the children properly.
Yeah, it takes a village.
Yeah, and the second generation was really completely left out. And it should be remembered, and these individuals, these young people, actually they're not that young anymore, they're in their, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, they have to be understood for what happened to them. In some cases, so much neglect, you know, and neglect and abuse. We have to make sure it doesn't happen again. We have to make sure that the people that are teaching our children, they're qualified. I can give an example. When I joined the temple in Detroit, they asked me, what did you do before you were, you know, before you were becoming a devotee? I said, I was a teacher. They said, oh, if you were teaching Karmi children, then you're not qualified to teach devotee children. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, I figured, all right, that was, you know, that's the way it worked. But it, in other words, it was kind of relegated to people who couldn't go out in Sankirtan, who couldn't do this,
yes,
who couldn't
that. That was our first mistake, that we put the least qualified people
right
to take care of children who needed
right
the most qualified.
You know, because can you imagine people that were teaching, you know, academics, and then also ashram, that was an impossible task for those people that were given that job. So of course you're gonna run out of patience, you're gonna react in a way that's not proper. So we have to put that education where it should be, right at the top with everything else.
You know? Yeah, actually we are opening temples, you know, even large temples everywhere. And where is the high school? Where is the Hare Krishna High School? Anywhere? No. So, and they, of course, they have a pujari room that you can fit a, you know, football stadium inside, but they don't have, they have one little classroom in a corner for education. What kind of kids are going to come out of this?
I mean, our school here goes up to 10th grade, which is pretty amazing. You know, the Gurukula, and from there they can go to a Santa Fe College, and they can do a dual enrollment program where they can take, you know, college courses. When they finish high school, they've got 2 years of college completed. So there are ways to do it, but it's like everybody has to be on board. And again, I just want to reiterate how important it is for those children who did go through such hard times because of ignorance.
Need to change the battery.
Because of ignorance, you know, that they should be, you know, taken care of. They should be taken care of. They should be treated.
I'm with you. You're preaching to the choir. Yeah, there's,
all right,
you, need
well,
a, you need a new battery for that microphone.
I'm sure you're part of the choir, I think. This goes on everywhere, and everyone needs
yes,
to know.
Yes, we know. We know. Now we know. Now it's up to us what we do with that knowledge that we have. Yeah, because we've been neglecting education, neglecting our children, putting the least qualified people. Exactly, people who couldn't distribute books. Oh, you can't be a pujari, you can't be a book distributor, you can't be a cook. Okay, you'll be the teacher. That's, you know,
right.
And we, well, actually, I witnessed when I was in Santiago, Chile, I remember some boy joined, and he used to cook before. He knew how to cook somehow or other. So they put him as, they made him the cook. Then nobody bothered to ask him, what was your last job before you joined? He worked in a slaughterhouse. So we all got sick from eating his cooking. And the people that we preached to, because the devotees were going to distribute books on the buses, and the buses, at least in Chile at that time, carried miners and, you know, plumbers and so on. So that's the kind of crowd that we got. No one was educated. So the people that we, they weren't qualified to teach. So we forgot to think about things, you know, how to do things. One, two, three. So yes, I'm glad you brought the point up, because we need, more than anything else, we need education. We need to educate our prabhus and our ladies, and then we need to educate our children too. Just give them a chance. Give them a chance. All right, I think, unless there's something urgent, I appreciate your generosity, please. There you go. So we have something. We have to get something more. Please come tomorrow to listen to Nitai Prabhu's class. It's going to be probably a lot better than what I had to give. Thank you. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.